Hello everyone, this is George Clark for Ivy Hoops Online. Today I am at Newman Arena on the campus of Cornell, and we are meeting with Big Red head coach Brian Earle. Brian, thank you so much for giving us some of your time.
Great to be here with you. Thank you.
In his playing days, Brian was one of the all-time great Tigers. He is now in his eighth season high above Cayuga's waters. I think it is fair to say that you have restored the proud culture of Cornell hoops. How much have you enjoyed your time here, Coach?
I've enjoyed it a great deal. People here are very welcoming. You know, we have gone, we've had some ups and downs here, and they understand the fight we're up against in the league year in and year out. So I've enjoyed the time here. There have been challenges and some failures and successes. And so that, I think, at any place you're going to come up against that. But it's a warm place to be welcomed into in Ithaca.
And I assume your family feels the same way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my wife is happy, and my kids have no idea. And that's what kids, you know, they're happy when they don't know what else is out there. And so they dig into the culture, trying to play a little basketball, which is not as easy as it was for me growing up in Jersey. But we find our places, and they're around the team a lot. So they're happy, as 8, 10, and 12-year-olds should be.
I must say, I remember the first trip back to Jadwin that you made as skipper here, and I saw your wife, and I asked her how she was doing and how the kids were doing, and she said, the only thing she said was the kids don't understand why they can't sit in their usual seats.
Yeah, they love their time at Princeton, and we're I graduated there, and I'm very close with a lot of people, including my old teammates, and so they know it and will always know it as a part of our family.
Coach, your club is off to its best start in your time here, 13-3 at this point, 6-0 at home and 3-0 in the Ivy League. You have been competitive in every game, including a tough night at Baylor when they decided to open their new arena when you guys were there. And of course, at Syracuse in the annual Battle of I-81, you gave them all they could handle. What are the keys, would you say, to your success to this point?
Well, I mean, I think the players, you know, so much is made out of coaching, but in the end, the players make the plays, and our guys, we've played a different style of basketball, and it takes a little bit of sacrifice out of everybody, and I think our guys have really bought into that as much as they can, and so we play a lot of guys when we can. We play fast. We press. And there's a fair amount of giving up a few points in a few minutes out of your totals for the greater good. And I think so our guys are probably the major part of why things to this point have been relatively successful this year.
You're well on your way to a third straight appearance in Ivy Madness and fourth overall. Your up-tempo style, as you just described, is certainly unique in the league. And certainly different from your playing days. What was the inspiration for you in adopting the style with which you were not overly familiar growing up?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're always searching for an edge, and we played really slow when Mitch and I played at Princeton. But you have other experiences. I played on a high school team that was very good, and we played fast. I played with my brother, and we grew up playing that way. And so it's sort of just a combination of all the influences in your life. And so Princeton was a big part of it. We still try to get high percentage shots. I think we're leading the country in two-point percentage. But combined with that is a little bit of, you know, how we played growing up. Our guards crash for rebounds, and that's a little bit of, you know, my brother had a knack for the ball, and he was a point guard, and he was always going backwards, and that was interesting to me to think about why someone who could go get a rebound just because they're small shouldn't go get it. And so we've tried to just incorporate a lot of those type of things where we're influencing the game in pace. We're okay with an early shot as long as we define it as a good shot. And so it's, I think during the pandemic is where we really shifted gears. You had a year to sort of experiment, and we took advantage of it, and you know, went full in with this, and to this point, it's been working. You know, our record's better than it was prior to the shift.
It certainly has been better.
Yeah.
When you got here, the Big Red was pretty much Matt Morgan and friends.
Right.
Morgan, of course, was one of the greatest players in Cornell history. And I remember being here the night he got his 2,000th point.
Right.
Lately, your substitution patterns look like line changes in hockey. I want to ask you, how do you sell recruits on this style of play? I know they come in realizing the way you play, and how do they buy into it as recruits?
Well, I think, you know, everyone forever has said we want to play fast, and we, you know, we're going to get up and down, and we want to share the ball. But in recruiting, we can point to it and say we actually are playing fast. We're the, you know, fifth fastest team in the country, and we get a lot of possessions. Guys, when they're open, are going to take shots. And so, you know, recruiting is sales in a lot of ways, and people have used that line forever, but we have a little bit of data to back it up now. And so we let them know if they play hard, they improve, they're going to get on the court. We have nights where guys play 30 something minutes, but in a lot of cases, again, you're giving up a little bit of minutes here and there and maybe a point or two in one game, and you'll get it back on the next game. And so it takes a little sacrifice, but we sort of screen for that in the recruiting process, guys who aren't going to be too selfish with their individual statistics.
Well, having had a chance to watch your teams over the years, unselfishness is a great characteristic, and it's certainly a characteristic your teams have, and I think, in fairness to Mitch, his teams play that way too.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think we're cut from the same cloth. And, you know, it's a team sport. As much as everything is going in a direction of NIL and transfer and whatever it may be, the best team wins, not necessarily the best player. And we've known that forever. And there's a certain amount of joy, and you're getting to the basics of what basketball is by playing like a team. And so a good pass is celebrated here. And I know it's celebrated down there too. You set your teammate up for a score, and it wasn't just him scoring. You had a lot to do with it. And that's something to be proud of.
Let's talk a little bit about your relationship with Mitch Henderson. You played together on some of the best teams in Princeton history. Your 1998 team was nationally ranked all year and finished at number 8. Last spring, when you played at Jadwin, we celebrated the 25th anniversary of that team. And all the players, coaches, and staff members were introduced at center court. And I'd have to say that your ovation was slightly louder than his.
Good. I like that. I don't know if that's objective, but I'll take it.
How was Mitch Henderson as a teammate?
I mean, he was great. You know, we were very competitive as teammates early. You know, he had started as a freshman. I came in the next year and started for much of the season in his place. And he's a killer, you know, and that's a good word in basketball. He took the spot back by the end of the year from me. And, you know, so we had a healthy and sometimes unhealthy competitive streak. And by my sophomore year and his junior year, we were playing together. And no one was taking the minutes from either of us. And I think we're a lot like brothers. I have a brother, an older brother. He has an older brother and a younger brother. And it's competitive. But then there's behind all of it is you'll go to the mat for the guy too. And so we sort of developed that as younger guys at Princeton. And, you know, he was in my wedding. I was at his wedding. We have been through everything together. And so, you know, it takes that little bit of friction in the beginning to become so close. And we have become very close as friends and have been through a lot over the years. And so I look at him a lot like a brother.
I can say this, you're almost the same age, but he has a lot more gray hair than you do, Coach.
Right. Just for men. No. He shows it.
Both you and Mitch got into coaching as top assistants. He at Northwestern with former Tiger skipper Bill Carmody, and then you returned to Princeton, and you were top assistant for several guys.
Yeah, and, for Sydney and then with Mitch, yeah.
And you also coached when John Thompson was there and Joe Scott.
No, I came in with Sydney.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I forgot that.
Yeah.
I'm getting a little old myself. Well, anyway, when Sydney left, you and Mitch both applied to be his successor. What was that like, competing with a fellow who was like a brother to you for that job?
Yeah, not fun, you know, and very familiar for both of us. We had both been there as players. I had been there as an assistant coach for a number of years. We had, the program had excelled. We had just come off a tournament appearance, a loss to Kentucky.
A game you might very well have won.
Right. We had a chance to we could have won it, I think. And then there was a change. And, you know, again, you know, we both knew what the score was on that we were both going after it. Neither of us had a bad word to say about each other. And we knew that there was going to be a tough result for one of us. And so you just roll with it. That's life. I mean, it's not a terrible position to be in to have a chance to be hired at 30-something for that job. And so we went into it wishing each other luck and trying to do it again like we did my freshman year as players.
Well, the first thing he did was to show just how smart he was. He hired you as his assistant.
Right, yeah.
Now, how tough, was it tough or difficult for you to sign on to that position?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, like any time there's upheaval, you're looking at options, you're wondering what the next step is. But I was very comfortable working with him. We had to feel each other out a little bit. We had become under Sydney and in those years a really, really, really staunch defensive team. And I think Mitch, as you can see with their team now, is a brilliant offensive coach. And so there were shifting of gears and we worked through that together. And so, you know, it was fun and exciting and same as most of life, just figuring it out, ups and downs but it was enjoyable.
Now let's fast forward. You've been here a number of years now. Is there still a little vibe when you get ready to play against him?
A little bit. It's nothing to do with Princeton. It's in this business, there's, you know, unlike most walks of life, people know how you're doing if they look on the website and see your record. You know, we just played Brown. They lost multiple games by under 5 points, and their record looks bad, but they're doing a good job.
That's a win on the road in the Ivy League. That's right. A feather in your cap.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, they're doing a great job. But if you look at the record, people say, what's going on? You know, and it's crazy. And so so in this business with people, you know, again, my brother's in it. I have close friends. When you don't want them to take a loss. And it's a little bit how I feel when we go up against Princeton is one of us has taken a loss. A little bit more, I hope it's Mitch, but I don't root for pain for family, basically.
Well, this week you're going to match up against Mitch and his club again. And when you play, at least a share of first place in the Ivy League will be on the line. What stands out in your mind as a coach who's getting ready to play Princeton? What stands out about that particular team?
Just they are so solid. I don't know if solid's a good enough word. They're exceptional in almost every area of the game. They pass it well to each other. And if you take that away, they're exceptional one-on-one almost across the board. So they'll kill you with that. And if you start running guys at people, they'll find the open man who will find the open man on offense. And then defensively, nothing's easy. Nothing is easy, and they all can defend. And, you know, if you think you're going to get a mismatch by posting Matt Alaco with your 6'9 guy, he doesn't care. He's going to guard that guy the best of his ability and live with the result. And so it's you know, just as you look to play opponents for a weakness, it's difficult to find a weakness in anything that they do. And so it's fun to watch when you're not playing against them.
This year in the Ivy League, at least to this point, there's a big three. You people, Princeton, and of course the Yale Bulldogs all are stand at 3-0 at this point. So it looks to me that the team that gets into the NCAA tournament, if it's you people, you're going to have to beat Princeton and Yale on successive nights. What can you tell me about Yale right now? How do you assess them?
Very similarly to Princeton. Not a lot of weakness out there. And they don't make mistakes offensively, defensively. They just execute. They know what they're doing. They've played with each other for a long time. And there's a certain calmness to them. Even in moments where a team will make a run, they just seem so almost professional in their outlook on how to stem those runs. And so you admire that. I mean, it's difficult to find a place to poke a hole in what they do on either side of the ball. And so Princeton and Yale in particular are two that, they are strong across the board, I think, on both sides of the ball.
They're very scary, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I'm going to wrap this up. I've taken enough of your time, and I really appreciate it. It's great to see you. I've actually known you for a long time.
Right.
And I do want to reminisce for a second. 10, 12 years ago, you and I happened to be in the same group in a fundraising golf tournament for the Friends of Princeton basketball. And I recall you hitting a shot. You missed a hole-in-one by an inch.
Right.
I don't know if you recall that, but it's one of the best shots I've ever seen.
The story of my life. I missed it by an inch. Yeah. I don't golf. And so I should have just walked off the course at that point. So anyone who thinks I can that happens routinely is way, way off.
Well, it's a memory I'm going to share with you forever.
I appreciate it.
Thanks again, Coach, and good luck. It's great to see you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.